Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sheila Shoiga, and welcome to Ready to Be Real Conversations, the podcast series where I chat to people of all walks of life. Some names you'll recognise, others you might not. But my hope is that these conversations will at times inspire, challenge, educate, comfort, or simply entertain you. This week, I speak to new mum, Laura Curtis.
I'd lost a stone. And she was putting on weight and she was living her best life in there. Do you know what I mean? I'm struggling. But yeah. I think maybe that's why I was so sick, because I was fighting so much for her.
You were taking
her.
It all. Yeah. You were protecting her.
Yeah, which is incredible, because you don't realise how amazing a woman's body is and what we can do while we're in a coma. I'm fighting for her life.
Unbelievable.
From
Donaghmead in Dublin, she now lives in Balldoyle with her boyfriend Robbie and their newborn daughter Demi. But the past year has been one that she'll never forget. Having been through a miscarriage, she found herself pregnant again and was so looking forward to an uncomplicated pregnancy. But in March this year, at 20 weeks pregnant, she was diagnosed with COVID and ended up in ICU in Beaumont Hospital in a medically induced coma for 17 days. To try and save her life and that of her unborn daughter. This is a powerful conversation, but it's also a challenging listen at times, so please do read the show notes before continuing, as I want you to be prepared beforehand. Laura, thanks a million for agreeing to have this conversation today, because I know how hard it is to leave your newborn baby. She's only 6 weeks today.
6 weeks today.
So how's it all going?
It's going really good. Last night was probably the best night we've had. 10:30 till 6 o'clock this morning.
Oh, happy days.
Yeah, so...
Long may that continue.
Yeah, she's getting there. It's some days are better and some days aren't. But yeah, she's great. She just doesn't like napping without being in our arms. And we're so happy to have her here that we're like, oh, it's fine.
I know.
But you can't do anything else but have her in your arms.
I remember when, for me, what worked was a sling.
Oh, yeah.
So you could at least have them on you.
Get around.
But actually be able to use your arms.
Yeah. Yeah, because at the moment you can't do anything.
You can't do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't want to wake her.
Yeah. But I mean, you're still in the, I mean, the first 6 weeks, they all speak about the first 6 weeks being a bit of a blur. It's so...
That fourth trimester.
Yeah, like, the fourth trimester, yeah. Exactly.
They're trying to get used to you as well, or being out and about.
Yeah, it's a mad time for a first timer.
Yeah.
But with all you've gone through, mother of divine, I mean, you have been tested in ways that I can't get my head around, I'll be honest. So the fact that you're here today and you're coherent is an incredible achievement, and massive congrats for everything you've been through. So let's go right back to you and Robbie. And I suppose maybe when you met...
We've known each other for years. So we were friends for years. We worked together. And then I went off to Australia, done my bit of travelling, lived there for a couple of years. And he actually told me not to come home. He was like, don't come home. Australia's great. And I came home and we were back into working together. And yeah, kind of just fell into place. It happened. And from then, we've been together probably 2.5 years now. But it was great. I think it's great to start a relationship from a friendship because you know everything about that person. So yeah. I think that made it easier and made it probably feel like we're together a lot longer than we are because we were such close friends before. So yeah, so that's where it all started.
So 2.5 years together and now you have your little baby girl. But bring us back to when you found out you were pregnant.
Obviously this pregnancy with Demi was the second pregnancy. So it was a lot, it meant a lot more. We had a miscarriage early in the year last year. So when we did find out, I think it was extra special. And yeah, that feeling, I don't know, you can't really describe that feeling when you see that it's positive and you're pregnant and it's so much joy, but you're kind of overwhelmed. You don't really know what you're in for, I don't think, the road that's ahead.
And you had said that to me before, that you had experienced a miscarriage about this time last year.
Yeah.
And I think it does, when you find yourself pregnant after a loss, it's just different, isn't it? It's kind of like your innocence is gone.
Yeah, I think it's extra special, but I think if you would never experience that loss, you don't know what you're missing. Do you know what I mean? So when you experience the loss and then you're craving something and you want something and then you do get it, it's like that extra special feeling, isn't it? So yeah, when we found out, it was like really exciting.
So at the beginning of the pregnancy, how was it? How were you feeling?
So the first 3 months, morning sickness was a bit of a laugh. Yeah, I remember bringing my niece to see Santi at Christmas and getting sick on the side of the road.
Oh, God love you.
Yeah,
okay.
So I'm not a great
fun
traveller
times.
Anyway, so mixed that with a bit of morning sickness. And yeah, so it wasn't great. The first 3 months weren't great. And then the minute I hit the 13th week, it was like, okay, I feel great.
Okay.
And then bam, COVID hit.
Yeah.
So I kind of only had a couple of weeks of feeling okay.
Yeah, so you had about a 7 week window. So from week 13 to week 20 was
literally
good.
Yeah. Geez, I didn't even think actually of that window. Yeah, it was probably 13 to 20, and I was like, "This is great," you know, enjoying it. And then it was like, bam. So 7 weeks out of the 38 weeks were fun.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
So when you got COVID, you didn't know it was COVID initially, obviously. You just started to feel not great.
Just not great. Yeah, that's the only way I could describe it. When it first hit me, it was like, you know, I just need to go and lie down. Like that kind of feeling. I'm just not great. Like I couldn't describe it. And then day by day, it got kind of worse. And then obviously around that time, the fear was everything was COVID. But I was working from home. I wasn't mixing with anyone because I was pregnant. I had this extra caution about me.
Of course.
And when I rang my GP, she was like, oh, look, you're better off just going to get the test. Do you know what I mean? And I was like, oh, they're actually sending me for a test. Like, I didn't even kind of think of this. So, yeah, it kind of came as a bit of a shock. One minute I was fine and the next minute I wasn't, literally.
Yeah, because you weren't like a close contact, obviously, of anyone.
Well, my boyfriend, Robbie, had got tested positive and my mom. So
prior to you testing?
Well, they only tested after it because Robbie wasn't feeling great, kind of flu-y, but he has asthma. So he was kind of, his breathing wasn't great, but he just put it down to that.
Yeah.
So when we look back, it was probably him who had it first.
Okay. Yeah.
But then you don't know, did we show symptoms, did we not? Because we were living with my mum and dad at the time, and my dad didn't test positive. And we weren't isolating away from anyone.
I know.
So we all got it, apart from my dad.
Bizarre, isn't it?
Yeah.
We hear a lot of that, you know, that sometimes people can pick it up so quick and then other people, despite sharing a bed with somebody with COVID, might just not. So your mum and Robbie got tested after you, but you went for that test. Were you surprised when you found out you were COVID positive?
Yeah, so I went for the test on Saturday morning.
So how long had you had symptoms for at this stage?
So probably the Thursday I was a bit tired, but it was the Friday that I was like, oh, like the Thursday evening, like a bit tired, wasn't great. But it was the Friday that I was like, oh God, I'm going to ring my GP just because I'm pregnant, just to be extra sure.
Sure, yeah.
And then she sent me for a test on the Saturday morning.
Okay, so it was really quick.
Really quick. And then the Saturday night, I had tested positive. And I remember getting the text. I was sitting in the sitting room with everyone and I just started crying.
Yeah.
Because it was just like, oh God, like this overwhelming feeling. What does this mean? I wasn't expecting this. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So yeah, that wasn't a nice text to get, like.
And you're pregnant.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's scary, and you're in the middle, you're like, you're smack bang in the middle of the pregnancy at 20 weeks.
Yeah.
And you don't want to get that news, right? So you, unfortunately, you did.
Mm-hmm.
What happened then?
So I was upset on the Saturday night, but it was like, I don't feel bad. Do you know,
okay.
I'm okay. Sunday, again, wasn't great. A bit of a cough. And then kind of the Monday, it was like, okay, high temperature, 39.5. Like, I rang my GP again because, like, I don't know what this means. Do you know what I mean? I don't know what any of this means, like a really high temperature when you're pregnant. I can't take anything. I feel really bad now. And then on the Tuesday, like the Monday and the Tuesday, just got so much worse to the point where, like, Tuesday night when we did call the ambulance, I like couldn't really breathe and I was uncontrollably coughing, like, yeah, so it just kind of deteriorated within days.
Like, it must have been very scary.
Very scary, yeah. Because they say as well that when you get COVID, day 3 and 4, I think, are like the worst. So like everyone kind of kept saying to me, oh, you're going through the worst now. You'll be grand. Just once you get through those couple of days. But it wasn't. It was just getting so much worse and it wasn't getting better.
And as you said, you can't take anything. I mean, we all know, I mean, I'm 28 weeks pregnant now.
Yeah.
And I had a bit of a head cold there about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, I was even kind of nervous taking paracetamol.
I know.
Do you know what I mean? Because you're told not to take anything.
Yeah.
And your instinct as a mother or mother to be is to want to do the best thing for your baby.
Yeah.
That's all we can do.
I wasn't even eating a runny egg. Like,
that's it.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like the simple things. And now in hindsight, when I look back, what I did put into my body or what I had to put in.
What you had to
my body. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even eat a runny egg. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
So you were having these really aggressive symptoms, but you couldn't even take the stuff that anyone else with COVID could perhaps take.
Yeah.
To ease the pain, you know, help a little bit.
Yeah.
You couldn't do that.
No, I was taking the paracetamol, but again, I didn't want to be taking paracetamol. I didn't want to be taking anything.
Yeah.
But paracetamol when I was suffering.
Of course,
kind of
you
that
had
bad.
To. And also, it's probably important to kind of set it up. Back in March of this year, while the vaccine had reached our shores, it was still not recommended for pregnant women necessarily.
Yeah.
It hadn't been given the full green light at that stage.
No, it wasn't given the green light because I was obviously very aware that it wasn't. And I, like, everyone kind of around me was getting the vaccine. Like, Robbie had gotten the vaccine, my mom had gotten the vaccine, their first dose. So I was kind of in the stage where I'm not recommended to get it, so I can't get it. You know what I mean? It wasn't a choice at that stage. It was recommended. Pregnant women don't get it. And that was the way it was back in March.
And we did have a chat about this. So maybe we'll talk about it now.
Yeah.
About the vaccine, because what I shared with you is that I've been asked a lot about my own personal opinion about the vaccine, you know, through my followers on Instagram. And I'll be very honest, and I've spoken about it and I've put it up in my stories, that I'm just not going to comment on whether a pregnant woman should or should not get it.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, simply because I feel it's a personal choice.
Yeah.
And it's a very difficult decision to make. And I respect women who get the vaccine, but I also respect women who don't for their own personal reasons. And I know that may seem controversial to some people listening, but I just don't think it's my place to comment on it because I'm not a medical professional. I don't know enough about it to comment. And I respect that everybody has to make the right decision for them. And I know this is something that you've been asked about an awful lot, like me, but you mm-hmm. for very, very different reasons.
Yeah.
Because of what you've been through. And you feel very much like I do, that you don't want to comment on whether you think pregnant women should get the vaccine or not.
No, and especially in hindsight, what I've been through, like, if I had have got the vaccine, would I have gotten as sick? We don't know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If we just don't know what's going to happen. So like you said, we're not medical experts. It's anyone's personal opinion. Even if you're not pregnant, it's their personal choice whether they get it or not. So, yeah, I think there's kind of extra spotlight on pregnant women at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was a Tuesday. Was that a Tuesday you said the ambulance came?
Yeah, Tuesday midnight. So I think it was the midnight going into St. Patrick's Day. So the ambulance came. And at that stage, it was kind of like I went off in my Christmas PJs and I didn't really think anything. Like, I just kind of thought, oh, yeah, I'll head into hospital, get a little bit of oxygen, you know.
They'll send me home.
They'll send me home. I'll be fine. I'll see you in a couple of days. It was very scary going in to the ambulance by yourself and like your family.
Yeah, by yourself, of course.
Yeah, they're kind of waving you off as you get into the ambulance. And then it's like, you know, you're COVID positive, so it's like everyone's like, stay away from her, like, you know what I mean? So you're very isolated because you have COVID
and everybody's gowned up and covered up.
Everyone's gowned up, so it's like, that's one of the things I struggled with throughout the journey. Was you can't see people, you can't relate to who, like, if I was to see any of the consultants, the nurses, anyone, I wouldn't even know they were them standing in front of me because
they all look the same.
All
almost
I seen was their eyes. Yeah.
God, yeah, that must be so difficult.
Yeah, that was
especially when you're feeling scared and vulnerable.
Yeah, and you can't see people's facial expressions. Like, you don't know if someone's kind of smiling at you or looking sad, or, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
That was kind of one of the hardest parts, yeah.
So when you arrive into hospital, where what happens then? Where do they put you?
So I think, like, when I first went in, you go into, like, a COVID-positive A&E. Is what I assumed it was. And I'm in a room on a trolley with like three sections and I'm in the middle. There's one man beside me, but there's like a partition between us. And then there's me. And I was there from probably about midnight till I think 8 in the morning. So they were doing bloods and x-rays and all that kind of stuff on me. And checking the baby just to make sure the heartbeat, because I was obviously very concerned about her. Like, I just kept saying, check her. So, yeah, I stayed there for 8 hours before I got brought up to the ward.
Right. And at this stage, do your family know what's going on?
Probably not, like, to the extent. Do you know what I mean? Send a couple of texts. Yeah, I'm on a trolley. Like, I'm on a bed now, waiting. I'm getting bloods done. You know, it wasn't really until I got to the ward the next morning that I had spoke to them properly, but I don't know if I really remember the next couple of days.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And at this stage, are your symptoms just getting worse?
Yeah, so I think I was okay when I first went in. Like, I was kind of like, oh, it was all new, you know, like you're kind of being cautious of everything and you're checking everything. Because I remember when they said to me, we need to do an x-ray. We need to check if there's like clots on the lungs or how bad it is. And I was like, oh no, like I can't get an x-ray. I'm pregnant. And they were like, oh, you know, you kind of don't have an option here. You're very sick. And I was like, okay. So they actually gave me this, like, I think it's like a steel kind of belt or a metal belt that I put on my back. So they just x-rayed my lungs. Uh-huh. So
protect bump. Yeah.
So protect baby from the back. So that kind of gave me a bit of reassurance. And when they were checking bloods and stuff, again, it was fine. I was aware, I was alert. It was probably from throughout the next day that it's all a bit of a blur. I remember spots of the days, but not much.
And at this stage, are you in ICU?
No, so this stage I'm in a respiratory ward, up in St. Paul's ward in Beaumont. So no, it's like a high dependency unit.
And could Robbie or your folks come in and see you?
No.
No.
No, no visitors, because I'm sure a lot.
So tough.
Yeah, very hard. Very hard for them, very hard for me. Again, I was probably too sick in these days anyway to even, if they had have came in, I was too sick. I don't remember a lot. I was actually taking selfies while I was in the bed. Don't ask why. just taking pictures, but I was probably sending them to them because they were saying, how are you?
I get that. Yeah, of course.
And, you know, the first picture I took, I had a small oxygen in both nostrils. And then the other one, it was like a bigger mask. And then it was like a bigger one and a bigger one. And it just kind of kept going on because the levels of oxygen just weren't
doing the job.
Yeah, they just weren't doing what I needed. So I just got sicker and sicker and sicker.
And presumably the medical staff are in touch with your family to kind of keep them updated as much as possible, or are they?
Yeah, so in fairness to them, like, so good. Like, the communication between the nurses and doctors to... So Robbie was my next of kin, obviously, because I'm pregnant with his child. He's my next of kin, so he was the point of contact, which I think was good in hindsight. You know, my mum and dad probably would have found it very hard, or probably not been able to deal with the news sometimes that they were getting. Do you know what I mean?
Because I mean, not alone are they concerned about you, their daughter, but their granddaughter or their grandchild. Maybe they didn't know whether you were having a boy or a girl at this stage.
No, I knew all along. I was having a girl.
Okay.
She was always referred to as baby girl.
Okay, great.
So they were brilliant. Every morning, every evening, like throughout the day, they would contact if there was any changes or, you know what I mean? The communication was brilliant. And I think they were probably more aware of this because there was no visitors and because of COVID.
Yeah.
Maybe they made it their mission to kind of make sure the family were well aware, because no one could get into anybody.
Yeah. And when was a decision made that what we're doing and how we're looking after her is just, it's just not enough. It's not what she needs. We need to step up here and make a really, really difficult decision. I mean, when you hear it, and when I heard what you had went through initially, it is shocking to hear that at this stage you're then 21 weeks pregnant.
Yeah, between 20 and 20, just gone 21 when I went into ICU.
Okay.
Yeah.
That you have to be put into a medically induced coma.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not the stuff that it's a movie script rather than real life in a way.
Yeah, and it's funny because, you know, the way everyone is saying to me, "Oh God, your story, like, it's amazing what you've been through," and only probably up until last week, I'm like, "Oh Jesus, I know, it's mad, isn't it?" And I'm kind of brushing it off as if, "Oh God, I know," but it's only kind of now that I'm coming to terms with what I've been through.
Yeah.
And I don't think anyone else realises that. I was always pushing towards something. So when I got better, I was getting better for the baby. I was pregnant. Then when I had her, it was her. So now my focus is kind of stopped, that I'm kind of sitting down and thinking, right, you need to come to terms with what you've been through, because it was very surreal.
And, absolutely.
And sometimes it doesn't feel like it happened, but I need to, like, they spoke a lot about people in ICU that suffer from PTSD in a couple of months or years, or it might just hit you. And I was like, oh no, I'll be fine, because humour always kind of seems to be my go-to. I'll be grand, do you know? So,
yeah,
I think that's now something I need to kind of come to terms with, probably how sick I was and how close to, I don't like saying the word death, but how close to death I was, and the baby.
Yeah.
Which is very scary for not only me, but my friends and family.
Absolutely it is.
Yeah.
So getting help with that, and you probably need maybe outside help with it, which is probably a really healthy thing to do. To give yourself time to maybe sit down with somebody and talk it out, so that you do avoid, you know, because I think being aware of it is incredible to already be at the stage where you're starting to process it and take it in. As you said, you've been in this kind of survival mode for you and for your baby, and, you know, get her here safely, and she's in the world now, and she is safe and healthy and well, which is incredible.
Yeah.
But it's also important to acknowledge what you've been through emotionally and mentally, not just what you've experienced physically, and to give yourself space and time to process it. So I'm really glad that you're at that point, and that's very healthy, because hopefully then you can avoid a situation where you do experience maybe PTSD down the line.
Yeah.
So did they communicate to you that, Laura, we're going to have to do this?
I think so. Yeah, no, remember. They did. They were very good. They were very good. They would talk me through everything because I was very determined. What are you giving me? What is this? What is that? You know, I was very probably on their case too much because I wanted to know everything I was taking. And when they made the decision, I just remember being rushed to ICU. I don't like if you had have told me before I went to ICU that you were in ICU and that you would suffer, I probably wouldn't have realized the extent to what that means. Like, I don't know, until you're there, you don't know how sick someone is until you're actually there. So they actually allowed Robbie into me when I went to ICU first, because I remember being rushed down and like swarmed with a team of people, you know, doing different things, setting me up on different things, and Robbie just being there all gowned up standing beside me. So it was great to have him there.
Yeah.
But he looked petrified and I remember his face, and that made me why is he here? He's not allowed to be here. So the fact he's here means I'm sick. Do you know?
Yeah,
but
yeah,
probably
yeah. This is serious.
Yeah. And then the conversation was had that, look, Laura, like you're really not well. Like you're really, really sick. And we're going to try our best to look after you, but we don't know what that means right now. And you are only 21 weeks pregnant, so it's not a viable fetus until 24 weeks. So if we can't save the baby, we're going to try our best, of course, but if we can't save the baby, you're our priority. And that is just like the worst news after like a horrific year, you know, and then finding out you're pregnant, being halfway, thinking you're on the home stretch, and being told that, I was just like, no, please. And that's when I just went into hysterics.
Completely understandable. When you said that, I just got chilled through me, because it's your worst nightmare to hear those words.
Yeah. Like there's nothing I could do.
And your instinct, as you said there, was, you know, you weren't eating the runny eggs before this happened.
Yeah.
You were asking all the questions. What are you putting into me? Because you're, even though you have yet to hold your baby in your arms, you're already a mother in terms of what matters.
Yeah.
You're minding, you're watching out for her and you're trying to make the right decision.
Yeah.
But this is out of your control.
Yeah, by then it was definitely out of my control.
Yeah.
By then it was...
They had to say, they were looking at a very sick pregnant woman and that they wanted to save your life and ideally both lives, but at this stage the priority...
Was me.
Was
yeah.
you.
Yeah.
Tough.
That's hard to hear.
That's so hard.
Yeah, and I can only imagine Robbie standing beside me. That's hard to hear. Not only is his girlfriend going through this, it's his child too, you know?
Yeah, of course.
We kind of forget. I know I done all the hard work in terms of being sick and getting better, but he's still there and it's still his child as well, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, that was hard. And that was it then. I was put to sleep.
So you don't remember. So do you remember that moment beforehand that you were kind of hysterical?
No.
Okay.
I remember being told that and that was it.
Okay,
so I actually don't know the window of, okay, this is the news you're being told 2 hours later, 3 hours later, 20 minutes. Like, I don't know the window. That's the last thing I remember. And I was asleep then.
And you were asleep for 17 days.
17 days, yeah. Which, to me, I was having a great time. I was asleep. I was having great dreams. I was in Dubai. I was in Poland. Like, I was being held hostage at one stage in a hotel. Don't ask. But these are all very real.
Obviously. Did you really?
Yeah.
See, that's what you remember. Just complete dream state.
Yeah. Like if you asked me the day happened, I would tell you, yeah. Like,
okay.
To me, that's what I was doing.
You went to Dubai.
I was in Dubai, yeah.
Having the crack.
Yeah, living my best life. I was actually there with my hairdresser, which I think to myself, why was I thinking about that? But I had really bad roots at the time. So I wonder, was that on my mind when I was really sick? Don't ask.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So, but they were real.
Yeah,
I don't know
okay.
if it was because of the high doses of morphine that I was on. I was hallucinating or whatever. I was dreaming. I've never been in a coma before, so I don't know what to expect. But to me, they were real.
Yeah.
To me, that happened.
Yeah.
So I was having a great time while everyone else around me was suffering very bad.
So while that's your memory of it, what were you told when you came to about what those 17 days were like?
Even now, so like Robbie was brilliant. He sent out a text to all my friends and family every day. So when he spoke to the nurses and doctors, he updated everyone. Very detailed message. Laura had a good night, she had a bad night. This is the levels of oxygen, her levels of sedation. This is how she's doing. If there was any hiccups in the road, he was updating everyone. And those text messages kind of grew legs and they went to everyone, kind of all over Ireland at one stage. They were going. My mom was sending them on to everyone, my dad, my brother, you know, all my friends. It was on Facebook. Everyone was sharing it. So it, everyone was kind of invested in this story for the 17 days because at this stage, no one kind of heard this. No one knew that there was a 29-year-old pregnant woman in ICU with COVID. Like, I was a rarity at this stage. So he was brilliant. He updated everybody. And then when I came around, he had told people, don't show Laura the messages. Like, told kind of my mom and dad, when you're talking to her, don't tell her how long she was in the coma for. Don't, like, we need her to get better. Yeah. We don't want her to worry or to panic. So I kind of wasn't aware for a couple of days what had gone through, because when I did wake up, he was sitting beside me. So they allowed him back in when I woke up. They had obviously reduced the levels of sedation and I had came around and I was so thirsty. I just remember the thirst, like, because the ventilator was down my throat, the thirst was like unbelievable. And I told, like, he'd brought some drinks in for me, but I was only allowed to take one sup at a time.
Yeah.
So I would take literally one sup through a straw and cough loads. So I just kind of thought, I'm just after waking up, or I was kind of asleep for a day or two, because those days were fuzzy anyway. I was in and out of sleep, because you know when you have the flu, you're in and out of sleep anyway. So I kind of just thought, okay, here I am. I didn't realise what had just gone on for the last 17 days.
Yeah, you wouldn't have had any concept of time, I suppose.
No concept at all.
Before we get to that conversation that you had when you kind of came to, during this time, you're obviously being monitored, but baby is being monitored as well.
Yeah, baby's being monitored really closely by the Rotunda, which was brilliant. One of the head doctors, Dr. Maria Canelli, she used to come over. I think she came over two or three times while I was asleep, and she monitored baby. And once or twice she had Robbie on FaceTime so he could see, and like really above and beyond kind of stuff. Like that's stuff that they don't have to do. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, and that to me is just amazing. Like that they were doing that and taking the time out of their lives to come over and do that for us was just amazing. To give him a bit of reassurance as well while I was asleep was incredible.
Every life is precious, but I do think there's something unbelievably powerful yet vulnerable about a pregnant woman. So I would imagine that if I was, you know, to be in their shoes, that they wanted to do everything they possibly could to give you and your baby the best possible chance of getting through this bloody thing.
Oh, 100%. And like, I'm sure you're not going to work in a maternity hospital if that wasn't your passion or your fight. So I'm sure it wasn't anything. But to me, when I think back, it meant an awful lot. And to Robbie at the time, I'm sure it meant an awful lot, because he needed that reassurance. That was probably what was getting him through the days, you know, knowing, right, okay, I saw a baby girl, she's fine, which is great.
Yeah.
You know,
isn't it incredible? As you said, like at the beginning there, you know, we're told when we're pregnant to avoid this and avoid that and do this and don't do that. And yet when it comes down to it, there you are being pumped full of medications to get you through this, you know, this virus and, you know, stuff that you would never normally consider doing. And yet it was an example of the miracle of life. Your baby girl was thriving. Inside you.
Like, that was the word they used when they spoke to Robbie. Like, she's thriving. Like, she was putting on, like, weight. Like, she was...
you were losing weight, she was putting it on.
Like, I had lost a stone while I was in ICU. Like, you're meant to obviously put on weight while you're pregnant. And, like, they monitor how much weight you put on. I had lost a stone. And she was putting on weight and she was living her best life in there. Do you know what I mean? I'm struggling. But I think maybe that's why I was so sick, because I was fighting so much for her.
You were taking
her.
It all. Yeah. You were protecting her.
Yeah, which is incredible, because isn't you it? Don't realise how amazing a woman's body is and what we can do while we're in a coma. I'm fighting for her life.
And even I remember you saying that, you know, we're told not to lie on her back necessarily when you're pregnant, because it puts too much pressure, and then you're told to like lie on your side, ideally your left, but certainly you'd never lie on your stomach when you're pregnant. It's a big no-no.
No, and you wouldn't be able to, you know yourself, like I'm looking at you, if you were to lie on your belly, like you just wouldn't be able. And I remember when I'd be on my side, I'd be like, right, left side. And even if you're uncomfortable, you're like, no, that's what I'm told. And then I was prone on my belly for 16 hours a day. Like, I had bed sores on my face. Like, I had, like, scabs kind of on my chin and a big, huge one on my forehead from being face planted into the bed. So, like, 16 hours a day is a lot of hours. So, like, I know I joked on one of the interviews that I done with the paper saying, I'm surprised she didn't come out with a flat face. But, like, it's, like, how did she not? Like, when she came out and I looked at her, I was like, how is she perfect?
Yeah,
like not a blemish on her, because what she has been through, and even the line on 16 hours, that's so long.
Unbelievable. I would imagine they probably tried to prop you up as much as possible, maybe to take pressure off bump, but nonetheless.
Yeah, I'm sure there was some sort of concoction gone around my bump or something they done to monitor that, but still.
And in those moments, so again, I want to get back to the conversation with you and Robbie, but before that, like, were there moments in those 17 days where it was not looking like you were improving? Or do you know what I mean? How was that experience in terms of what you've been told since?
So, again, I haven't been told massive amounts. Okay. The text messages that have gone out to everyone, Robbie is not letting me see. He's
protecting you.
He is asking Mom and Dad not to show me. He's kind of asking people, because it would have been too much. Like, if I was reading what I didn't need to read them at the time. Do you know? I didn't need to know what had gone on, because I needed to get better and be in a good headspace for this pregnancy. So his intentions were good for me. I think maybe once or twice things probably weren't looking great. I know they try to lower my sedation once anyway, and my body didn't respond well to it.
Okay.
And yeah, there was times that it probably wasn't looking great.
But thankfully, at the end of those 17 days, they made the decision to bring you around, because they were confident that you had been through certainly the worst of it at that stage.
Yeah, I don't actually know what the reasoning at the 17 days, right, now we can do it. I'm sure they tried a couple of times to lower it and were checking my body for my reactions. Like I said, there was once in particular that my body just did not respond well at all. Mm. And they had to put me back in the sedation. So yeah, I'm sure they were confident enough that waking me up at this point, I could come around well.
And as you mentioned as well, we're told when we're pregnant that you reach certain milestones that are real. They're really positive in your pregnancy. And you're told that the 24 weeks is something special about that, because that's when baby is considered viable and that they'll have a good chance if they had to be born at that stage. It's not guaranteed, but it's a far better chance than maybe the week or two previous. At this stage, you're kind of approaching the 24 weeks, I would imagine.
Yeah.
After being, because that, like, that's 2.5 weeks, so you were 21 weeks. So yeah, you would have been nearly the 24
nearly
weeks.
Nearly approaching the 24 weeks, yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
So, what was that chat like with you and Robbie when you came to? And you were asking for the water because you were thirsty. And how did that go?
Yeah, like when I think back to it, like I didn't have the concept of what I was saying because I had just come around. So I just turned to him and said, like, you do know I'm not pregnant anymore. And he was kind of just looking at me and I was like, because I had told him all these stories. And when I was telling him I was on holidays and all this kind of stuff, he was just laughing, kind of going ahead with it. Like he wasn't stopping me because I was telling him all about what I was going through.
And did you really think this had happened? This stuff had happened?
Like, to me, it still has. Like, to me, it was very real.
Okay, so it wasn't like I dreamt I was in Dubai with my hairdresser. No, I was actually in Dubai with my hairdresser.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Like, crazy stuff. Yeah, so, like, when I had said to him I'm not pregnant, he was like, all right. And I kind of said, yeah. But it wasn't like I was crying. I wasn't upset. Like, I was kind of just telling him facts. Like, it was like I was just telling him this.
Okay.
And he was like, no, you are. And I was like, no, I don't think I am. Like, because obviously on my mind, that was the last thing I heard.
Yeah.
And then he said, well, I have a heartbeat on my WhatsApp. Do you want to listen to it? And I was like, who, like, what? Who's Harpy? And he played it to me and I was like, oh my God, that's our baby. And he was like, yeah. He said, you're still pregnant. He said, they've been looking after the baby the whole time.
Jesus, Laura.
Yeah. So again, I didn't know to what, you know what I mean? I didn't know they were looking after me so well while I was asleep.
How did you feel when you heard the sound of her heart beating and knowing that? Did it take a while for it to sink in?
Yeah, I think it took probably days for it to sink in. Because I had lost so much weight as well. You know what, kind of 20 weeks, 21 weeks, you don't have a massive, well, I didn't have a massive bump. So when I looked down, I was kind of like, where is she? I was expecting to be huge all of a sudden, but I wasn't. So I was kind of like, is she in there? But yeah, it was kind of a couple of days, I would say, that it came around, if ever I kind of came to terms with it, because I struggled probably right up until I had her in my arms.
You're probably part of a kind of a unique club now of those who've come out the other side of being in a coma.
Yeah.
Because I don't think anyone can understand what that's like, because we haven't experienced it. I don't have a clue what that's like. Nobody does. And I think only maybe somebody who's been through that scenario might understand what it's like to come to after being put to sleep for over 2 weeks of your life. At this stage, I presume you can't still get out of bed.
No. This stage, I'm still lying in bed and there's contraptions everywhere.
Yeah.
Like you can see my neck. I had lines in both sides of my neck. So I've got scars on both sides.
But to be fair, they look like they're healing brilliantly.
Yeah, I'm kind of trying to look after them.
Good on you, yeah.
And, you know, you have lines in your arms for bloods being taken. I had oxygen still in one nostril and I was being fed through the other nostril.
So you still couldn't eat?
Still couldn't eat, no. And then, like, I had a catheter, I had everything because I was I couldn't do anything for nearly 3 weeks. So I didn't know to the extent, because I remember when the physio came, I think it could have been a couple of days after, and they said, you know, we're going to try and get you back up, kind of practice some walking, and grand. And they gave me like a frame and I sat on the edge of the bed and she said, look, just put your feet down onto the ground and touch the ground with your feet. And then we'll kind of take one step and go from there. But sure, I didn't realize that I had been given like muscle relaxers and they'd killed all my muscles. Like I was completely immobile for 3 weeks. And when I stood up, I just nearly fell to the ground.
You were like jelly.
Yeah, completely like jelly. So I kind of had to learn, and I didn't enjoy physio. When I seen the physio coming every day, I didn't want to do it. I didn't want to be out of bed. I was very uncomfortable sitting on my bum for weeks after because I was so used to lying down. It was horrible. They used to have to tell me to sit on a chair for half an hour, and I just really didn't want to do it. Like,
yeah. I would imagine the pressure put on you, you know, because your body was...
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was just like, it was too much for me to take two steps to the chair. Just too much at one stage.
So after you came to, how long did you stay in hospital for?
So I was in there for 5 weeks in total.
Total.
Yeah.
So daily physio, just trying to monitoring you all the time and trying to...
Speech and language, like all that kind of stuff, yeah. Because my throat was so damaged from the ventilator. Like even now, I'm talking to you and you wouldn't have known my voice before, but my voice is different.
Is it?
Yeah, when I, like, it strains a lot. Like when I laugh, I kind of can't laugh well. You know, like my dad even said to me the other day, he said, you sound gas when you're laughing because you can't actually laugh properly because it's still strained a bit. And I kind of gasp sometimes when I've talked for too long. I'll give more of a breath, you know. So I had to kind of, like, I was on like an easy to chew diet when I did come round off the tube, being fed through the tube. So, yeah, my throat was damaged. They had talked about giving me a tracheotomy, you know, through the neck. Yeah. Thankfully, I didn't have to get one of those because I kept pulling the ventilator out. Which was a good sign to them because I was aware that something was in my throat.
And the kind of the fight instinct, the survival instinct was, you know, I want to
get this out. Yeah,
get this out. I want to come back. So how were you when you left hospital? Like what kind of shape were you in at this stage? I presume you're exhausted and you're still, you know, your throat is sore and you've all these kind of pains and aches and pains. But COVID has left your body at this stage?
No.
It hasn't?
No, COVID's still in my body.
How long was it with you?
Well, we don't know. So when I was leaving, I had gotten a couple of CT scans before and after ICU. I had to get scans on my heart because apparently it can damage your heart. It wasn't damaged, thank God. But COVID, pneumonia, everything was still, my lungs are still very damaged while I was leaving. But I was on the other side of it, you know. I think I had gotten better quick enough for me to leave hospital because age probably was on my side. And a lot of the doctors had kind of said that, like, because the time I came out of ICU to the time I was discharged was probably very quick considering what it could have been. So when I first got home, I was just exhausted, like just exhausted from being in hospital. The last couple of days were like horrific. I just wanted to get out. Like hospital, when you're getting better and you're aware, is just not a nice place to be. No visitors, long days. You're getting bloods at 6 a.m. and 10 o'clock at night. You can't sleep, the machines. So when I first got home, I really struggled. Like I could only kind of walk up and down the stairs once a day. So again, I was still pretty bedridden. I was on so much steroids, antibiotics, morphine. I was actually on methadone when I was in there, which is pretty crazy to some people. I remember being in the hospital bed when I had came around, and because I was getting a lot of stuff in through the nose, one of the nurses was putting this green stuff into my nose, and I remember saying, I know what that is. There's only one thing that can be, and why are you giving me that? And apparently, like, one of the doctors, he sat down beside me and he started laughing at me. And he said, how do you know what that is? And I was like, you know, I've worked in the area of addiction or homelessness. I'm well aware of what you're putting into my body. Why are you putting this into my body? And he said it was the safest thing to give you coming off the morphine that was safe for you and baby.
Yeah, wow.
Which is crazy. You know, again, back to the runny eggs giving me,
when you think about it.
Yeah, methadone. So it was only a small amount, a couple of mils, and I was weaned off on the way down, like coming out of hospital. I was weaned down before I was allowed to go home. But the effects coming off of that was horrific when I got home. I hallucinated really bad, so I could see like ants and stuff in the corner of my eye and spiders and all. So if I turned my head sometimes, I could see things that weren't there. I was afraid of the dark, so I was afraid to go to sleep. I hated nighttime, and it was purely because we have like blackout curtains in the room, so the room is very dark, very quiet. When I hadn't experienced that in 5 weeks. I was always in light,
yeah,
and machines and nurses and, you know, like,
yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
It was very scary. I used to kind of have to change my PJs 2 or 3 times a night because I was drowned with sweat, because I was just, obviously I was
panicking
and coming off all of these drugs and medication. It was just very...
It's so strange when you say that. It's like when a drug addict decides to come off whatever drug they're on, that's, you're going through all of these withdrawals.
Yeah. Really bad withdrawals, actually, yeah.
And it's important to say as well, like, you had and have no underlying health condition.
No, I've never even had a cigarette in my life. I've never smoked.
Right.
I've never had breathing problems. I've never... Nothing.
Nothing.
Nothing, yeah. So I don't know why.
It's one of the strangest parts of it, isn't it? It's and we're certainly not having this conversation to freak anyone out or make anyone nervous, and that's certainly not our intention. But I think it's important to be aware that we just don't know. We just don't know how we're going to react or respond to something, yeah. You know,
or why our bodies respond in that way.
Yeah. So they never discovered anything.
No.
During the time you were in hospital that, you know, that you didn't realise he had it, as were. No. Nothing.
No, yeah.
Right, so how long did that last, that period of hallucination and panic and all that went with it? When did that start to fade? Did it last for a long time?
I can't really remember. Probably a couple of weeks.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
Probably the guts of 2 or 3 weeks, because, like... I couldn't stand nearly by myself. I had to have a chair in the shower, you know, like all of that kind of stuff was, it would have been a couple of weeks. Like when I was going to the rotunda to get checked out, I was in a wheelchair, like Robbie was wheeling me in a wheelchair. Like I hadn't got the use of my legs for quite a while, and the energy and the breathlessness was a long time. If and probably the breathlessness and the energy probably didn't come around till after the baby was born.
Okay.
Because of the pressure of the growing bump.
Yeah. And all the while, as you said already, she's thriving. So she's growing, she's doing what babies do, and you know, she's gaining weight, she's getting bigger, she's developing on a daily basis while you're still really struggling in bits. Yeah. Let's fast forward then to July of this year.
Yeah.
And... she decides to make her entrance, but again, it wasn't an easy path. It was a dramatic road to her birth.
Yeah.
Can you talk about that?
Yeah, so I was induced at 38 weeks and three or four days.
So you knew that was going to happen?
Yeah, I knew that was going to happen. They had talked to me about it because I was so sick, because I had COVID, they wanted it to be very... planned to try and get the best outcome for someone who had been so sick. So yeah, didn't go to plan. as labours do, I suppose. You can't really predict what's going to happen. It looked great. My cervix was favourable, everything looked well, it looked like the birth was going to be an easy enough road. When I went in, my waters were broken. I was brought to the labour ward and we were kind of on the home stretch. I was actually on blood thinners from the time I had left Beaumont. So I had to inject myself with blood thinners because I was at a high risk of blood clots because of COVID and because of being pregnant. So I was at a higher risk. So I was taking those every night. But I was told that if you take them within 12 hours of going into labour, you can't get an epidural.
Oh, God. Right. OK.
So when I was told I was being induced on the Tuesday, I stopped them on the Sunday because I was like, I'm not taking any chances here.
Yeah.
So I had stopped them in well enough time. But look, that didn't go to plan either. I had tried to get in the epidural. It took 5 times. They kept hitting arteries and hitting blood vessels, and there was blood everywhere, and it was a lovely experience.
God, so I love you.
5 epidurals I took, which again was not a nice thing to go through. But then the epidural didn't work. So after all that, it didn't actually work.
Okay.
So I'm on the oxytocin and the contractions are getting stronger. And, you know, when you have the gas and air, I was getting sick and through the night. And it was just like horrific. And I got to the stage where I'd been on the oxytocin for 12 hours and I was only 3 centimeters. And they were like, Laura, this is not happening. We're going to have to bring you down to theatre. So I was rushed down, pretty much emergency section.
But you know, I also really feel for, I really feel for you. I really feel for women when, you know, when you're told, oh, you're only such a centimetre.
Yeah.
It's bloody hard work to get to 1 centimetre.
I know.
You
know,
your body is doing something for a first time that it's never done before.
Yeah.
And it's opening up in a way it has never done before. It's a big deal. So I always feel it does a disservice, I think, to women to say you're only 1, 2, 3 centimetres, whatever it is. Instead of saying you've already got to, you know, bloody well done, because you've done that. And the fact that you thought you were going to get the epidural and then that didn't happen. I really feel for you. And then you're landed with this. And by the way, so you've gone through this discomfort, for want of a better word, putting it mildly, so far. And now we're going to have to bring you down to perform an emergency C-section.
Yeah. I don't even know, because I was in so much pain and I was squealing. The whole of Parnell Street could hear me at one stage. I didn't even know what it meant, because I was just like, get her out now. Like, you know, because I was getting hysterical and, you know, they were monitoring her and I could hear her, and her heartbeat was going up and down and she was nearly getting into distress because I was in distress. So I just wanted her out immediately.
I know. So, your instinct is just, I want a healthy, safe baby. You know, let's just do what is necessary. Yeah.
So when we got down into theatre, it's the same room that I was there last year after getting the D&C from the miscarriage. That's kind of flooding back. Is she going to be okay? Like, is this actually the time I'm going to meet my baby after all of this? Do you know? Like, so I'm screaming for Robbie. And
was he allowed in?
He was allowed in as they put the kind of curtain up between you and your belly. He was allowed in. I think he walked in on everything. So he pretty much saw her kind of coming out as he kind of got to me.
Okay.
She came out. But everyone talks to me about this huge scream that they give when they first come out. And she just didn't. So they had said to me, right, like 2 minutes until she's going to be here. So I'm like waiting. And they're like, baby's here. And I was like, I can't hear her. So me and Robbie are like in hysterics beside each other, like both crying, thinking, is she okay? And then she's just like propped up over the curtain. There's your baby. And she's kind of like nearly gooing and gan. And I'm like,
yeah, okay.
Why is she not crying? But now even her temperament isn't to cry. Yeah, you know what I mean? Or to be loud. So
And not all babies do. Some of them are quite chilled.
Like,
I know. Yeah.
Like,
we're used
roar.
To hearing it. Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So she didn't give that. And I was like, oh, but then she was perfect.
Perfect. Yeah. So is she she's a laid back baby?
Yeah, she's not, like, she's fine in her lungs, don't get me wrong.
Of course.
But she's chilled enough, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't it amazing after what you have been through? And you're incredible. I mean, mother of God, you're amazing. But also that she is, and that she came out perfect. Perfect after everything.
Yeah. Like, and the first thing I said, has she got 10 fingers? Has she got 10 toes?
Yeah.
Like, is she, like, you know, I was expect, not that I was expecting something.
No, but you want to make sure.
There was a huge worry. Like, you know, I had a baby shower a couple of weeks before. All my friends and family were like, oh, we can't wait for Miracle Baby. And even when people would compliment me, oh, look at your bump and all, I never wanted to talk about my pregnancy. From the time I was in Beaumont to the time she was born, I didn't want to talk about it because, what if she's not okay? What if this doesn't end good? Do you know, we're still not home and dry. So, yeah, when she did kind of come out and she was perfect, it was like, oh my God, the relief was just Unbelievable.
I can only imagine, because even despite what you've been through, for any woman who's been pregnant,
yeah,
you know, when they come out, you do kind of, whether you know it or not, you kind of do check over, don't you?
Yeah.
To want to make sure. So I can only begin to imagine that was magnified 1,000,000%
yeah.
in your situation. But yeah, so you had the C-section, which in itself as well is a big deal, let's be honest, you know.
Yeah, hard recovery from that as well.
Yeah.
Very hard, because it's like...
And you're still only recovering.
Yeah, it's like major abdominal surgery.
Yeah.
Okay, off you go for the first time to look after this baby. It's like, okay, hold on. I've just had, like you said, major surgery, and you're expected to now look after a newborn. So it's very hard. It's very hard. Those kind of 2 or 3 weeks getting home are very hard.
And within a year, you have been through a miscarriage that led to a DNC procedure. And I've had 2 of them myself. So I know what it's like.
Yeah.
And then you find out you're pregnant, and then you go through COVID. But you don't just go through COVID. You're in a coma for 17 days. And you go on to have your baby by emergency C-section. Mother God's a lot, isn't it, Laura? It's a lot to take in.
Well, I think when you put it like that.
Yeah, yeah.
When you kind of put it all into the fact that I'd never been in hospital before in my life. So
okay,
from
no experience of it.
No, never been in an ambulance, never been in hospital. So from last July to this July.
Wow, go hard or go home.
Go hard or go home. Yeah, it's been
full
pretty
on.
Extreme. Yeah.
You need to go to Dubai with a hairdresser at some point.
Yeah.
To just
I'll get her to listen to this and tell her she can book it.
Yeah. And look, for those listening, I'm not making light of your situation, but I also get how powerful a tool humour is. And it's something that I think a lot of us will resonate with. Whenever you go through shit times, it's a great protection to be able to use humour to kind of get you through something that's really scary and tough, because otherwise you'd go mad.
And it's what I use. It's what I kind of, all I know, and it's what I go to. And like I said, you've caught me at a good time doing this podcast, because I think probably about 2 weeks ago, I wouldn't have been able to sit here and explain it as well as I can. Like, I am now only coming to terms and acknowledging what my mum and dad and what Robbie, and not to accept my extended family and my friends, actually went through those 17 days. Do you know what I mean? Because it was always, okay, right, Laura's out of the coma now. Let's focus on getting her better. Let's focus on baby girl. Let's focus on this. But I'm only kind of now coming to the terms and acknowledging, like, how would that have felt for my mum and dad and for Robbie, for my brother, for, you know what I mean? Like, even when I talk to some of my friends, I had a couple of my friends over the weekend, they actually still get upset when we talk about it. And I keep going back to humour. Oh, I'm grand. And I laugh, kind of, you know, oh, sure, look, you can't get rid of a good thing. And they're like, no, Laura, like, that was a really scary time for us. And
yeah.
I suppose because I wasn't, like, I was asleep, but I suppose, like, I didn't know what it felt like waking up every morning and getting the text to see if I was still alive or to see if I had made it through another night. Do you know? So I think it's only now I'm starting to acknowledge what everyone has been through and how hard it must have been for them, because I was always their focus. Once she's okay, once she's better, but now I think it's time to probably focus on how everyone else is as well and how they felt.
That's a really gorgeous thing to say. I think it says a lot about you as a person that you're still only in the early weeks of being a mom. Like, you know, your little girl, Demi, is only 6 weeks, and you're already thinking about other people and how it's been for them. So I think that just shows that you're really a gorgeous person. But also, I'm sure they would be saying to you, no, focus on you right now. Don't worry about us. We're grand. And look, I'm not belittling, because I can only imagine that it was a living hell every day, not knowing. And the fear of, will you wake up? Will you come to? But right now, I'm sure they would, all they want for you is for you to be okay, because it's no joke being a new mom at the best of times. But with all the stuff that you've experienced, you have that to contend with as well. So I think right now it's day by day, and just mind you and mind baby, and take it a step at a time.
I think there will probably come a time, hopefully it won't be too bad, but there will come a time where I'll go, right. At the moment though, like this, even this podcast is therapy for me. Talking through it, talking to someone about it. I talk to my friends about it. You know what I mean? I talk to Robbie, my mom and dad. Like, I talk to people about it. So talking about it is great. And there's only, like, there's different things that are coming up. Like, even when I'm coming in to talk to you today, like, Robbie's like, and don't forget to say this. And you did know this happened. And I'm like, no, I didn't know that. Do you know what I mean? So it's, I'm still learning about kind of what I've been through and what had happened. And yeah, I think talking about it is a good coping mechanism at the moment.
And he's probably drip feeding you. Sorry for the pun, but like, but in terms of information, he's probably telling you little bits at a time.
Little bits, yeah. Well, I think he's probably trying to forget about it to a certain extent as well, because it's very stressful for him. Mm. But yeah, trying not to tell me too much information at once, like overload, where I'll panic and go, what? Because even up until recently, it's like, oh, I actually did nearly die. And that's probably something that I couldn't say for a while, because that's pretty scary. I wouldn't have known. Do you know what I mean? Because I was asleep, so I wouldn't have known. So yeah, that's something I'm still coming to terms with.
And you probably will be for a long time.
Yeah, probably.
You know, but look at you know, think about in, I don't know, say 10 years time, 10, 20 years time, your little girl will grow into a, you know, your baby will grow into a girl, into a woman, and she'll be able to tell everyone what a warrior her mom was.
Yeah.
You know, and is, and her.
Yeah.
Like, how'd you get on anyway? And, you know, oh yeah, sure, when my mom was pregnant, she was in a coma for 17 days. What?
Yeah, people probably won't even believe her. They'd be like, do you hear what that little kid is saying?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. But it'll be the truth. You're amazing. I'm just in awe of it. It's such a shocking story, but it's so inspiring, because you're here and she's here and you're healthy. And I know you're still in a recovery, not alone from your COVID experience, but from going through a traumatic birth experience as well. And the recovery that comes with the C-section, but it's amazing. And, I'm just really grateful to you for taking time to be here today. I know you're really thankful to the staff who looked after you during that crazy time back in March and April. Is there anything you'd like to say before I let you go?
I am so thankful to them, because I can only imagine how hard it was for them. Because, like, I had this conversation with you a couple of days ago. Mm. Like, we forget that they're human. We forget that the decisions they make are keeping me alive or me not making it. Imagine how that must weigh on them going home and trying to sleep at night as well. Do you know? The decisions they make determines the outcome for me. So I don't know if I can ever express in words how grateful I am to both the Rotunda and to Beaumont Hospital, to the doctors and nurses there. Like, no amount of words can express how grateful I am. They're just amazing. Like, they are absolutely amazing people. And I had emailed a couple of them just to say thanks, because a few had said to Robbie, like, when I was leaving, make sure you send us on a picture of the baby. And like, because it's like an end of the story for them as well.
Sure.
So I sent them on a couple of photos of Demi when she was born, and I just thanked them. And lots of them got back to me, and like, were just really, really nice. Like, they took their time out to send me back an email. And yeah, I can't express how grateful I am to them. They're just amazing, wonderful people.
And that must be hugely satisfying for them to see you well and her well after everything. Yeah.
Yeah. After all the hard work and the worry that they had, to see that it ended well, I'm sure is like really nice for them.
Yeah. Well, look, I hope when you get home that you can, I know it's. I was going to say, can you have a nap? But I know what it's like to have a newborn.
Maybe I won't go home. Yeah. Maybe I'll sneak off for a couple of hours. It's the first time I've left her, so I'm like, oh,
I
my
know,
God.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah. It's the longest I'm away from her, this hour. Is she okay? What's she doing, I wonder?
Yeah. It's
probably
amazing
nothing.
How quick your life changes, isn't it?
Oh, God, who are you telling?
Yeah. It's mad. It's a huge transformation.
Yeah, like, I haven't had time to even think about, like I said, I haven't even had time to think about anything.
No.
Because it was like, okay, you need to get better because you're having a baby. So, like, where's the time to even process anything?
No, I know.
Because she's there.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah.
the remarkable Laura Curtis, and I wish her, Robbie and their daughter Demi all the very best going forward. You've been listening to Ready to Be Real Conversations.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.